Welcome to the War Report on Public Education. The future of education is an important concern for our time. Where it's heading, how it's evolving, and the influence corporate America has on its outcome. The War Report on Public Education provides critical news, analysis, and perspectives on the what, why, who, where, when, and how of both the new corporate state elites campaign, the Machiavellian agenda to destroy the nation's public education system, and the rising public resistance movement to defend and defeat this Machiavellian agenda. And now, here is our host, Dr. James Avington Miller, Jr.
Hello, everyone, and welcome back to the War Report. This week, or I should say maybe the last 10 days, there has been a lot of activity taking place that directly impacts the public education community. The students, teachers, parents, communities, all across the U.S. I've got a panel of some of the best thinkers, activists, advocates around the country who have agreed to come on and talk about, have a conversation over some of the more salient issues and their implications for us here in the U.S. Today we have Dr. Mark Nason, coming out of New York. We have Dr. Deborah, I hate saying that middle name, Duncan Owens, coming out of Upper State New York. Yeah, Deborah, Duncan, come on.
Then we I'm not related to him, but I'll...
Then we have, coming out of the Northwest, Peggy Robinson. We all know her. And, of course, me, and then Dr. Jesse Turner will be on at the last part of the show. One thing that all of our guests have in common, every one of them have been on the show either as a guest, co-host, more than three times, probably the most of any of the guests we've had over the last year, year and a half. So there's a commonality there. We sort of like know each other. We're familiar with each other, and we want to let it rip. With that, I'm not going to do the bios because you know them, and plus we have bios up at one of our sites. Let's get to it. Hello, everyone.
Hello.
Hello.
Good. Now, some of the big things that happened, and what really kicked it off was about maybe it was 10 days ago when AFT came out, I think it was on a Saturday, and announced prematurely it was endorsing Hillary Clinton for her presidential run for 2016. That created a shitstorm. People, teachers, parents, others in the ed community, I'm going to say we because I was part of that shitstorm because I was totally upset, although it was totally expected, not this soon and the way in which it took place. You guys, when you heard about it, what were your reactions? Let's start with Mark.
I was enraged and felt that we needed to send a powerful message to teachers' union leaders that if they are going to continue to betray the teachers, students, and families of this country, that we are going to have to get rid of them. The gloves are off.
All right. Peggy?
You know, it just felt like more of the same. And I think for me that's the frustrating piece here is that, you know, you hear on one side that in some ways they're going to support us, and then bam, they come out with something like that that is just like a sledgehammer to the profession. And so it's more of the same, which, again, confirms the need for revolution.
Deborah?
Same. I was not surprised. I think I fully well expected it, but I just didn't expect it this soon. And I also felt there was a huge issue with Randy Weingarten serving on the board of Clinton's PAC, Priorities USA Action. And I thought that was improper at best for her to issue such a premature endorsement on behalf of the union with her ties to the Hillary Clinton campaign. So that was one big issue for me.
Okay. Were you or anyone, I won't say surprised because we all sort of expected this would come sooner or later. What do you want to speculate on what NEA will do? Since NEA is very close, their leadership are buddy-buddies, they are both Common Core supporters, they're both, in my view, are neoliberal Democrats. Clinton is definitely a, and again, my view, definitely a neoliberal, whatever what you would call third way Democrat. What do you see speculating on what NEA will do?
That's a really
no
good
doubt
question.
In my,
go ahead, Mark.
There's no doubt in my mind that they will endorse Clinton.
Right, I agree.
Sooner or later.
I think they'll take their time, because they've been put on notice through social media with their members that they want other candidates examined more closely. But I think at the end of the day, as history will prove out, that they will endorse Hillary Clinton's campaign. What do you think, Peggy?
Yeah, I think you're right. I think right now everybody's using Bernie Sanders as a really great distraction from what's really going to go down. So, yeah, I would totally agree with that.
Yeah, I think it's unfortunate, because I think what we'll see is Hillary Clinton will just continue the neoliberal agenda, but she'll do it more cleverly, and she'll do it in a way that makes everybody feel good about, I'll give you one little thing, a scrap at the table, but I'm going to keep pushing the neoliberal agenda of free markets and the privatization of education under the guise of charter schools or public schools. So, I don't see any difference.
Mark?
I think what they're going to do is go through a process that is very different from the AFT. They'll have people present their platforms to members. They'll have a lot of discussion, but they'll end up with the same conclusion. And there's no evidence that there's any difference between Clinton's views on education and Obama's. So, as Deborah said, we may see some rhetorical gestures towards teachers. Oh, I love teachers. I don't think she'll do something like celebrate National Charter School Week during Teacher Appreciation Week the way Obama did, almost as a way of sticking it to teachers. So in that sense, the climate will be a little better. There won't be just, in-your-face attacks on teachers, but programmatically there'll be no difference. And
what do you think will be the process? By that I mean, will rank and file really have a real legitimate opportunity to vote who they want to endorse? And by that, not only will we say endorse the tons of millions of dollars that the unions have to put into the campaign. Will rank and file be able to have one person, one vote opportunity and tally those votes up? And if Bernie Sanders or someone else comes up with the majority, will the union leadership go with the rank and files?
This is Deb. I wish everybody would just, like, take a deep breath. We're so early in the presidential cycle that I think the ECAA vote last week was very telling. We don't really know where the candidates stand on very specific issues yet, and we haven't held them accountable for declaring their positions on very specific issues. And so I think, I don't know what their process will actually be. I wish everyone would just, I think Peggy's right. I think there's a lot of distracting messages out there now. Bernie Sanders voted in favor of ECAA. Elizabeth Warren voted against it, although they voted for amendments. They're protesting. I mean, it's a really confusing thing right now, and I think we need to hold them accountable for their positions right now. before we make any decisions.
Deborah, you know that was one of my questions coming later. You just took my thunder.
Sorry.
See, that's a Duncan kind of move.
Well, the Scots, we have it. You know what I'm saying? Right
Peggy,
or wrong.
Peggy, what do you think?
Oh, you know, I got to tell you, to me it doesn't really matter. I mean, you know, whatever happens, if it's Hillary, if it's Bernie, I don't think any of it matters, because the bottom line is it's the Democratic Party is owned by the corporation. So it doesn't matter who
yes.
gets it. I don't care. I don't even care who they endorse. Like, I could care less. Because for me, I know that's not where we're going to make any headway. What scares me about it is that it would be very easy to funnel everybody's energy toward all of that and totally destroy any chance of an opt-out revolution. That is what scares me.
True,
I agree
Peggy,
with
true.
That. Mark? I think that anything which diverts from grassroots activism, which disrupts the system, opting out, which undermines the database, disrupting appearances of politicians, I think we need to do what Black Lives Matter did at Netroots Nation. Anytime a politician promotes policies which undermine public education, somebody should get up on the stage and confront them. I think we have to up the ante in terms of pressure on all fronts in ways that make this test machine unable to do its business.
I agree with everything both of you said, and I will just say this. We can learn from the civil rights movement. I posted this a couple of times on Facebook when people were saying, oh, you know, opt-out is in the, they're putting it in the legislation, and, oh, that's good, we've got a little inkling here and a little inkling there. We don't need permission. The civil rights movement, the people who staged sit-ins at Walmart, at the Walgreens counter and at the bus stations, or who took a sip out of a whites-only water fountain, didn't need a legislation to tell them that they could do that. They didn't ask permission. They just did it, and it's an act of social justice. And it's an act of defiance, and that's what we need. And I think the opt-out movement has the real power.
Can I give you a civil rights slogan? It isn't nice to block the doorway. It isn't nice to go to jail. There may be nicer ways to do it, but the nice ways always fail.
There you
yeah.
go. Yep.
That's
yeah,
where
and
we're
I
at.
That's exactly where we're at. And I, go ahead.
No. Mine was irrelevant.
The one thing I wanted to say, James, that for me as an activist, you know, and I'm reading Chris Hedges constantly lately, and one of the things he says is you're not going to get anywhere by appealing to the corporate power, but by terrifying it. And I guess my point is this. It has to hurt them. It doesn't hurt them.
Yes.
They're not feeling any pain. They feel no pain. If they did feel pain, let me tell you right now, AFT would have never endorsed Clinton. They don't feel it, so we've got to make it hurt. And in order to do that, we've got to put every bit of energy we can towards the opt-out and depriving them of the data. And like Mark is saying it, I never know the name of it, Netroots Nation or whatever it's called, where they Black Lives Matter got up and spoke. It has to hurt. And what's
yeah,
been happening
I also
is
promote,
everyone is appealing.
We need home visits. Anybody who takes a policy that, you know, destroys opportunities for teachers and students and families, there should be picket lines at their houses. They shouldn't be able to go home without worrying about us.
Yep.
That's what we're, it's got to come to that. They don't listen to reason. They don't listen to research. They only
but they
will
do,
know
they
fear.
Do listen to their profits being dried up, and that's what they will listen to. And when you have so many parents opting their students out, and then Pearson's not making the money they thought they were going to, that speaks volumes. And you're right, drying up that big database they want to create, invalidating it, invalidating the use of test scores for teacher evaluations and making determinations about whether a school's going to live or die. When you don't have, you invalidate that database when you have a certain number of parents opting out.
Well, you guys have taken my breath away. I don't have any more to say. I guess the show is over. Okay.
No,
back
I'm back. Let me say this. I'm possibly due to the whole social media experience, because, you know, when I was writing my book, I was just hunkered down working as a full-time professor. And so I'm kind of new to the movements. And the one thing I will say is that the opt-out movement is the one I think that has the most power to take back our public school system and to dry up the corporate profits and to get them out of the business. And so that's why, you know, I'm getting my toes in the water and becoming a little more spirited in my comments about standardized testing. I don't care what you call it for a kid, if it's state-driven or if it's federal-driven, it's still a standardized test, and it detracts from their educational experience, and it's harmful to them. And so I'm going to stand on the side of kids, period.
Yeah. I also think there's another thing we need to do, and we're starting to do this in New York with Let Him Play, is work with high school and junior high school students in low-income and middle-class neighborhoods who are being deprived of arts and sports and counseling and languages, and help them organize, you know, protests to get what they need and what they deserve. So yeah, I
Absolutely.
Think that front has to be simultaneous with opt-out. What kids
yep.
need
yep.
as opposed to what they're giving them.
Yes.
Let me insert something. Peggy, you remember, I think maybe it was the last show that we did together, maybe it was in December of last year, when I said to you that United Opt Out and Journey for Justice had filed their civil rights complaint with the Department of Education and the Justice Department claiming discrimination, et cetera, against three school districts, Chicago, New Orleans, and New Jersey. And I said to you and Sarest that your two movements, Opt Out and Journey for Justice, to me, were the only two activist actions that struck at the heart of the beast.
Mm-hmm.
You heard that the next day you wrote a blog piece about striking at the heart of the beast. It hasn't changed. In fact, you have made it, and what happened in New York has made it even more salient, showing everyone across the nation that this is what can be done when we organize, well, when we are aware, we understand, we are emotionally engaged, and we take coordinated, concerted action. This is what can happen. And so that it was going to be one of the questions that I was going to throw out to everyone in terms of what the legislation that is seemingly going to come out of Congress, what impact it was going to be on opt-out, but we sort of pretty much have gotten that question taken care of. Moving our agenda now, back to the unions, both at the national, state, local level. Given everything that we've said and I guess the emotion that we've expressed here, what impact, if any of what we've talked about is going to have on them? Back to my question in terms of, will rank and file be able to say to Randy nationally, was it Mulgrew in New York, we don't want our union to go the way in which you guys have been taking us for X number of years? Will they do anything, rank and file, will they do anything other than bitch and moan and let same old, same old, same old continue to happen?
Yeah, that's a really good question, because I think there's a lot of anger right now and the feeling of hopelessness. And there's also a feeling of I don't care because, you know, endorse or not endorse, the endorsements are great for the candidates because they get all of the public recognition and the media picks up on and blasts it across the country. But I think the union members, the rank and file, will go to the polls and vote their conscience. And I think so in that sense, we'll see. If everybody really goes out and votes their conscience in the primaries, then I think we may be able to have some power back to the people. I don't know. What do you guys think?
Well, you know, I am a union member, NEA, and I, again, I hate to be a pessimist, but, you know, the problem is you've got the national and you've got the state feeding information to the rank and file that does not reflect what is really going on. So the only hope I see within the union at this point is the Progressive Caucus. There are multiple ones all over the country right now that are coming together, again, a grassroots group, to try to push the union to do the right thing. And I got to tell you, and I told Mark this, it's probably the most brutal work I have done is with my Progressive Caucus and trying to fight to get the truth to the rank and file. It's incredibly difficult. That's the only place I see the hope. Other than that, when you're looking at national, I don't see any hope.
I'm a labor historian, and I'm incredibly pessimistic about the union leadership because the unions have become a job and patronage agency for people who don't want to teach anymore. And because they get so much funding from people like Gates and other sources, they are going to protect their jobs over their membership. And I think what Peggy is saying, yes, you have to do work with the caucuses. I also think you're going to have people threaten to leave and form alternative unions if they don't shape up. It's going to come to that. You may have to form alternative unions because these structures are incredibly corrupted by where they're getting their money from.
Mark, last September, I proposed that. On the show, that what the rank and file needed to do, and especially there in New York, was to decertify the union. Screw the caucus, because you have no power. And I'm, you know, speaking there in New York and nationally, the AFT, you have no power. Al, Shaker, whatever his name was, when he set it up so that all the power would be with the people who were in office perpetually.
Yeah.
You can have all the more.
Let me tell you.
More in any other. Let me finish, Mark. Let me finish.
Okay.
More in any of the other caucuses, progressive, what have you. You have no power. You won't have any power. To me, you have to sometime realize that it's like over. And this is, again, this is me. And you need to decertify across the country. California the same way. On and on and on. Now, again, I said that in September. Oh, and by the way, none of the union people have ever agreed to come on the show, state, locally. I think I'm persona non grata across the country. But Mark, you were going to say something.
Okay, I'm a student of the labor history of the 1930s. And what eventually happened was because the existing American Federation of Leaders, AFL leaders, craft unionists, who had white-only unions, refused to organize industrial workers in factories. The entirely new labor federation was formed called the Congress of Industrial Organizations to organize basic industry and organize it on a non-racially discriminatory basis. I think in the next 5 years, we're going to have massive departures from the two teachers' unions to form new teachers' unions. If there's going to be any way out of this morass. And maybe the progressive caucuses within these unions, if they're blocked the way James says they are, may end up having to do that. I don't think these unions are redeemable in their current form without massive, massive shakeup and threats of defections.
Well, you may be right, Mark. Yeah, you may be right. I think one of the problems with the union endorsements, too, is that I taught school in Mississippi. It's a right-to-work state. The union is is almost non-existent. And but what happens is when the headlines splash the AFT supports Hillary Clinton, everyone assumes that across the country, you know, that it just paints a broad brush across the country. And teachers who are in non-union states suffer the same consequences, where
teachers are looked at as just trying to get shorter work days and shorter work years, and they don't care about the kids, they're just about themselves, and it does a lot of damage.
So let me throw something out. What I would call a three-pronged strategy. I think decertification should be on the table. I think organizing within the existing unions should be on the table. And I think leaving the unions and forming new ones should be on the table. All three. Because the unions are as much an obstacle to getting rid of the testing and the privatization as are the politicians. The unions are as much an obstacle as the politicians right now.
I would say more. I would say more so, Mark, for the simple reason...
Well, I would say... Go ahead, James.
For the simple reason, they are Trojan horses. And you know, the person who you have the closest to you, ask Caesar when he turned around to Brutus, et tu, Brute. They're the ones who can do the most damage and the most harm.
Well, and I think Lamar Alexander's statements before Congress, he personally thanked the AFT and the NEA for helping to pass ECAA. He said without their help, it would have been much more difficult.
I rest my case.
Yeah. So we, you know, basically what we're saying is as activists, right now the unions are as much an obstacle to removing the test regime that is destroying public education as are the politicians of both parties. So we as activists who will refuse to compromise on what we know is right have to take that into account.
Okay, let's get ready to move on to another arena of issues. But before we go, one last question here. The vote this past was a Thursday in the Senate where virtually every Democrat voted against us. And my question becomes now, first I want to say, you know, what James Jones and Dallas would say, you know, how about those cowboys? Well, how about those Dems? How about those corporate neoliberal Dems? What a show they put on.
A couple of things come to mind. First of all, the Democrats have bought in hook, line, and sinker to the neoliberal agenda. You can't tell the difference between George H.W. Bush's education policies and Bill Clinton's education policies and Barack Obama's education policies because it's a neoliberal agenda. And so, quite frankly, I wasn't surprised at all because they are very protesting. They love the data for whatever reason. And I wasn't surprised at all.
Peggy?
No, not surprised in the least. I expected that to happen. I think again, what is concerning me is not what's happening in that arena because as far as I'm concerned, it's going to continue this way. I mean, the corporations own the government. And so for me, it's just people getting really clear in their head about what that means. And if you understand that big picture, then you have to really determine where you're going to funnel your energy. And that, for me right now, is probably the most frightening thing to watch is this idea of appealing to the government for, let's say, a piece of the pie, you know, the grade span testing, for example. That concerns me because, again, you know, if grade span testing stays in place, they're still making all the profit they want because most of the money is funneled through the technology and the infrastructure anyway. So for me, it's like, was I surprised? No. What does concern me and does surprise me is how quickly we can shift our energy to think that we might get a little instead of demanding everything. And I think sometimes it's because we are so conditioned to believe that we can't get it all that we just accept what little piece we can get. And that's where United Opt Out continues to come back again and again and say, we have non-negotiable demands. We want all for all children. If you try to tell us you know, go fight for this one little piece and funnel all your energy into it, we're going to say no again and again and again because it's not enough. It's not good enough. And if everybody realized that and you had the mass opt out, this would disappear so quickly. That's what is, I think, so mind-boggling to me, is how fast we could take this down if everybody funneled their energy toward one, or as Mark said, you know, a three-pronged approach, but being very careful not to waste your time on anything that's simply an appeasement.
I agree with Peggy. Peggy, I think compromise is the worst thing. I think compromise is our enemy at this point. We have to speak for what's the best, in the best interest of the children of this country.
Yeah. Let us also remember that there are jobs that people are maneuvering for in the Clinton Department of Education, and that some of our former allies are not averse to imagining, you know, and they'll say, well, I can make more of a difference inside the system. But this system is totally irredeemable in its current form. We need to have... But there's no compromise with this. This whole idea that data and testing as a way to achieve equity, is that this is a new form of civil rights, is so you know, pernicious and toxic that we have to smash it entirely. And my little proposal, which probably won't go anywhere, is that we pick a day in the summer of 2016 and surround Congress with hundreds of thousands of people around an anti-testing mission with no, you know, speakers, nothing else, just, you know, hundreds of thousands of people saying no surrounding Congress. People from all points of the political spectrum who are fed up.
Mark, let me get this in. Mark, if you were up late last night, as you usually are, you would have seen some PMing an email between me and Robert Valenti. I always said his last name wrong. Defend Ed and Duncan Fain. He has proposed a massive march, protest march, maybe this fall, this spring. I've added to it what you just said in terms of, you know, something even more massive that would be across the country, that would be exactly like you said. Congress, state houses, and in front of the homes of those politicians, making it really huge. Whether or not we can pull it, and I are going to talk about it later today, if we could pull this off, that's exactly in the vein that you were talking about. Let's move on to the other issue. I guess we sort of pretty covered everything. What I want to say now in terms of wrapping this up is, given what we've witnessed the past 10 days, the Senate finally getting its version of the bill has to go to the House for conference meeting. We all know that. The Dems lining up, voting the way in which they have, both in the House and in the Senate, the Republicans. What's kind of mostly likely to come out of that in terms of the compromise bill, and yes, Obama will sign it. Don't even think about the fact that he would veto it. Given all of that, another song or song title comes up in my mind, and that is, you know, what's all about Alfie? In this case, I would say, what we have an Alfie moment here. What is it all about? At the end of the day, when all the tarts are aligned and we have this bill, what's it all about?
I think it's all about this. We don't really value our children in this country. I think one thing that we've done is we've given a big toehold to corporate America. At the Palisades Conference, when Bill Clinton spoke, he said to the business community, you know best what to do about education. You should make policy. And they have ever since. They've been making the policies for education. And who's gotten lost in all of this? What's it all about, Alfie? It's about the children. Public schools serve our nation's children, our most precious resource. They don't have a seat at the policy table. They don't get to vote. And so, but what's being foisted on them is 5 more years of reauthorized ESEA with standardized testing and data mining as the cornerstone, and that's what I think it's all about.
Peggy?
Yes, for me, what it's all about is it was a reality check. I think that this entire summer, honestly, people have been spinning their wheels, chasing after false dreams, whether it was grade span testing, Bernie, ESCA reauthorization, actually doing something worthwhile. None of it helps children. It's never been about the kids. And I think that there was this, and I get it, this hope that, again, this false hope that something, somebody would actually do something right for once, and it didn't happen. So it's a reality check, because then it's back in our, the ball's back in our park again, because this is us. This is up to us. It's going to be hard work, and we've got to quit being hopeful and thinking that somebody's going to give us something, because they're not. They will give us nothing until it hurts, and it's going to have to hurt like hell. And so that is what it was for me. Reality check, get back to work, get those opt-out meetings scheduled for August, and let's get this done.
Mark?
If they're willing, look at what they're willing to do to a whole country in Greece. They're continuing to do it to our children. Revolution. No compromise.
What you just said, Mark, is basically what I wanted to hear. And Deborah, you have said it too throughout the show. That is, we're talking about neoliberalism.
No, your connection's out there.
And in the very first show, going back almost 16 months, I talked very briefly about neoliberalism. Okay, I'm being told that my phone connection is bad. They're going to switch over to another phone for me so that you guys can hear me much better. Mark, you guys continue the conversation. I'll be out for a few seconds. I'll be back.
Right. Hello?
Hey, Mark.
I can't tell you how much I appreciate your voices at this point. Sometimes I feel like Don Quixote, you know?
Yeah.
And but they're at least they're Don. They're a bunch of us.
There are. And I hope that everybody's going to be in Philly at the UOL conference, February 26th to the 28th. I'm going to throw in a plug for that.
I know Mark will be there. Oh yeah, I'm so there.
Mark's there. I don't know if Deborah's coming or not, but we would love to have you.
You
might be gone too.
Peggy, you're amazing. I mean, it's, you know, in the dark moments of the night, knowing you and you're around and Seresta and, you know, and other people who just won't sell out, because so many people are selling
right.
out.
I know.
It's not just
that's the other hard part this summer is seeing that. That's been really that's been pretty gut-wrenching.
Yeah, and I won't name individuals because that's not how I work, but
right.
it's across the board. You know,
it is.
And
it is.
So some of us have to, you know, just keep putting out what we know is right and standing up, and even if it's sometimes we feel alone.
Exactly.
Speaking truth to power, I dropped out for a couple of minutes, and I'm not sure what you were talking about, but I'm not sure. NPE came out with their endorsement, a qualified endorsement of ECAA, and so about 3 hours ago, I posted on Diane Ravitch's blog a question and asked her about that, because she's posting sort of, you know, the problem with standardized testing, and she has not responded to me, so... I personally was a little disappointed that NPE rushed to provide a qualified endorsement of ECAA.
She's very close to Randy, Diane.
Yes. And I
and also study
that.
And study Diane's history. You know, that's all I can say is in New York State, she opposed community-based curriculum in the 90s. And so
right.
I think
right.
I won't say this publicly. I won't go after her because she's made such a great contribution. But nothing surprises me right now.
Right. And I think we're all, you know, we all laud Diane Ravitch's activism in recent years. But, yes, there is that. I asked her, you know, would you please explain? But she's never responded to any of my comments before, so I didn't expect her to this time.
Yeah. And also,
well,
just remember.
You joined me in that regard. Go ahead, Mark.
Yeah, that the UFT built its power on a racist strike against the black community, the community control movement in New York City in 1968.
Mm-hmm.
And look into the history of the 1968 teachers' strike if you want to understand the UFT.
Right. Yes. You're absolutely right.
Mm-hmm. We have Jesse on the line. He hasn't said anything, but Jesse, if you want to make a comment before we even get to your segment, you know you can.
Community school, and particularly led by the black community, who wanted a community-based school, community curriculum, fighting for more black teachers, teachers of color at their schools. And so we do have a New York union who felt threatened by that. So Walk is right in that point. So there
uh-huh.
there's a history. That's what I'm saying.
We've got just a few minutes before we turn it over to Jesse so he can give us an update on what the last week, next week you'll be in Washington. So before we get to you, Jesse, Deb, I think you pretty much have said everything that I think you wanted to say, but just to be sure, one of the things you wrote in your article on to endorse or not to endorse, that is the question. You talked about a timeline, the timing of AFT's endorsement of Hillary, the rush to find victory as the Senate voted. Explain that for a second. That's the message that I think you really was trying to get out to the public.
I thought it was ironic that on July 10th, the Network for Public Schools did a qualified endorsement of the ECAA agenda. And then on July 11th, the AFT endorsed Hillary Clinton. And that just sort of struck me as odd that within 24 hours, we had these two endorsements. And I was trying to puzzle over, as I was writing the blog, what that means. And then at the same time, the opt-out movement produce a statement that really echoes what I was thinking, is why are we compromising at all? And why are we claiming a victory that all of this is going back at the states' rights issue, which has been the Republican mantra for how many decades now? How many abuses did the federal government have to try to remedy because of states' rights issues? And so now what we have is 50 states trying to create public policy for education, and they can come up with their own ideas and their own thoughts. What is the role of the federal government? I don't really understand. So that then we have to go through decades more of trying to unpack what the states have done in education policy. I thought
okay.
that was really interesting.
Let me insert. Last week, I think it was, and the week before that, when that issue of the state's right, that my position was very, very, very clear. Remember, it was states' rights that caused the American Revolution. Remember, it was the states' right issue that caused the Civil War. Remember, it was the states' right issue that destroyed the fledgling Reconstruction period, probably the most progressive period in American history. Remember, it was the states' rights issue that the Supreme Court at the time, back in the 18, Mark, you're the historian, but the late 1880s or so, said that in Plessy versus Ferguson, that separate but equal was cool, did not violate
any part of a constitution, which was the code word for separate and unequal. Remember, it was states' rights that led the Supreme Court in 54 to ban separate but equal. Remember, it was the 60s that the civil rights movement. I can go on and on and on, and I'm not a historian. And what we are doing is going back to the future.
No. And remember that it was the National Governors Association that brought us ACHIEVE and brought us the Common Core State Standards and brought us our education policy, very cleverly circumventing federal policy and prohibitions about the federal government being involved in the curriculum. So we're right back where we started.
Right.
And let me just say something about one quick thing about civil rights. And I was very much involved in the, you know, the 80s and 90s with efforts to try to improve schools in inner city communities by getting culturally appropriate curriculum and having schools serve as real community institutions. That was the thrust of civil rights activism, and that was fiercely fought by the AFT, you know, by most liberal and conservative leaders. And so what they replaced it with is a sanitized, top-down, government-mandated curriculum, which is supposed to promote equity, rather than community-based schools whose curriculum reflects the traditions of the communities they're located in. And, and that, I think, is a huge mistake.
Peggy, last word. Reading all of your stuff, you pretty much have said what I think is your message for today, but I'm going to let you reiterate and tell me if I'm right or not. You said people need to stop compromising.
Right.
They need to stop chasing false hope.
Yeah.
They need to remember that this is a people's movement.
Yep.
This is the revolution.
Yep. Yeah.
This is the revolution, and I think the last thing they need to realize is that this ESEA thing is a total joke. The state policymakers are completely corrupt. So the federal government did their job. It is totally infested in all of our state governments, and the question is this. This is what they're thinking. How fast can we get this done? How fast can we dismantle these public schools before the people have enough power to stop us? So it's a race now. It truly is. How fast can we mobilize people to opt out, to stop the state policymakers from moving forward? Because here in Colorado, I tell you what, if people don't get on board, they're going to take it, and they're going to destroy this entire state. But if we get ahead of the game and have this revolution of opt-out, we can stop them, and they will be forced to change their policies. Opt-out was never about opting out of a test. Opt-out was about demanding social policies to protect communities from poverty and making sure that all schools are equitable. It was much more than just getting the right to opt out of the test. That's never what this is about. We want it all. So I think that's what for people have to remember. Don't just ask for a little piece of it. Demand it all, because these kids deserve it.
Okay, we are time is up, but I want to say one thing. Thank you for president.
Right.
Amen. She's got my vote.
I can support that. She got my vote.
Okay, I'm going to be your campaign manager. It's a done deal. We're going to get on it. Jesse, we got about 5 minutes. Tell us what's happening or what has happened, and then tell us you're going to be in Washington this time next week. So you got 5 minutes.
Yes, I'll be in Washington. I'll be in Washington on Friday. They have me scheduled to hit D.C. at around 3 o'clock to meet the bat parade at 4. So I'll be there. There's no problem. I'm 33 miles from Washington. If you follow my walking schedule, I can do that in 3 days. So we're actually slowing down the walking so that I can arrive at the time the bats want me to walk. There are quite a few events going to happen in Baltimore. They all start on Monday. Monday I'll be at Tolson University talking to education students. On Monday night I'll be at a community group of fathers, a black community group. There's so many things going on Tuesday. I'm going to meet with a woman and her son, Cindy, and her son, Ben. And Ben is like lots of special needs kids. He's not verbal. That sort of like Andrea Pratt Radziski, whose son was chased into hospice care and still told that even in hospice care he had to take the test. So Ben is one of those kids whose mother in Fredericksburg, Maryland, one of the most progressive education states, not Florida, not down in the South, you know, and Ben's mother is being told that he needs to take these tests and be exposed to Common Core teaching. And she's been fighting it tooth and nail. I meet with them on Tuesday, and I'll probably think I'm on a talk show on Tuesday, and I'll be meeting with some members of the press. But the exciting thing is to meet with Cindy and Ben, because Ben represents a million other kids in America who shouldn't be taking this test, who, if I can't be verbal, if my cognitive sense of ability says I can't be verbal, then why are you doing this to me? This is punishment. This is evil. So I'm excited that I get to meet Cindy. We've touched base on Facebook. So that's the big event for me. Meeting Cindy, talking to Ben, it brings me full circle to Ethan's story. Andrea Pratt with the Siski's son, who died in hospice care and who the Commission of Florida insisted had to be tested. So Tuesday, that's my big event. I meet with Ken. I'm excited about that. There are other events going on in Baltimore. I'll be at the Dream House on Wednesday from 1 to 4 with a group of community activists. And the Dream House is a nonprofit for young people. It's just a wonderful place to be. And, you know, and then Wednesday night I'll be with another Baltimore group of, I think they're called the 300 group. So there's just lots of things going on in Baltimore before I get to D.C. So I'm excited about those things.
And 1 minute more on what you're going to do in D.C. Is the mock trial going to be next Sunday, or?
The mock trial is on the Friday. It's on the Friday. It's at 6 o'clock that night. So I arrive at 4. We do the parade. We do some talking, some meeting in the bats. And then we've got a room that will fit over 300 people. We think we're going to pack it. SOS is putting corporate reform on trial, the people versus corporate reform. And we're ready to go. And guess what? We got all the good guys ready to testify. So we needed some people to play the bad guys. I'm going to be Arne Duncan. So just to give you an idea of that.
Yeah, touché. Touché.
I'm going to use his own words. I'm using his own words. One more thing I want to say is my GoFundMe is over the limit. I don't need any more money. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you to everybody who contributed, everybody who put a like on a Facebook, everybody who wrote a comment. You have inspired and compelled me. So I just want to say thank you. You don't need to give another penny to that GoFundMe.
Good. I'm broke as is. I'll give you one more
yes,
minute.
You did contribute.
Okay. But I'm not a corporation. Hey, one more thing. Your message on what we talked about today in terms of the endorsement issue. Anything to say quickly?
There can be no compromise. We're talking about children. If we compromise on our children, if that's what we do, if anyone who says they would compromise on a child is the wrong person. So this idea that it's some kind of, we're going to compromise the curriculum, we're going to compromise the annual testing is still a part of it. I'm not compromising. I'm still fighting. I'm going to take this to the wall. There's no compromise. You don't compromise morality. When there's nothing in the new bill that says Ben, the kid that I'm going to meet on Tuesday, will not be tested. There's nothing in there. Actually, it says, hey, if Maryland wants to test them, they can. They have the full support of the Senate, the Congress, and the United States Department of Education. Maryland can do whatever they want. So that compromise is not good enough for me.
Okay,
it's
let
time
me say
and,
very quickly. The moot trial is going to be Friday at 6 o'clock D.C. time. And who's going to be on trial? The corporate minions, and you will be Arne Duncan. We have 30 seconds left.
I'm going to have a list of his quotes. I don't need to put words in his mouth.
That's good. We got 30 seconds. Let me finish out here. First of all, thank everyone. You guys did exactly what I knew you were going to do. Each of you in your own right was magnificent. I was starting to say something about the fact that what's driving all of this is the neoliberal political economy philosophy that has dominated the world for the last 35 years. To really understand what's happening to you individually, collectively, to us as a nation, to the world, you have to understand neoliberalism. I promised the first show back in 14, 15 months ago that when I thought the audience was ready, I would do something on neoliberalism. I think we're ready now. I'm planning a three-part series on neoliberalism. It may start next week or the week after. The first two shows would be me solo. Third show would be people like Deborah coming back and others who know neoliberalism. With that, folks, I have to say goodbye. I'm over my time. Have a good Sunday, everyone. Mark, Peggy, Deb, and the public ed community.
Join us again next time as we explore and become aware of the most pressing problem of our time, education, corporate America, and their unholy alliance.